Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok Jacobson. This is tape number 48 in the series, entitled Hitting Rock Bottom, recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, on the 7th of Tishrei, 5759.
Yud Zayin, in the middle of chapter 17 of the Tanya, Daf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph, page 45, seven lines from the top, after the period, V'hamayach Shalad B'tivay, B'tildasa. In the beginning of this chapter, the Alter Rebbe returned to explain the pasuk in Parshas Nitzavim, which is essentially the central motto and theme of the whole Tanya. The pasuk, Hikarev Elecha Hadavar Miyayid Beficha Vavavcha La'asaisai, that this matter of Torah and mitzvahs, of Yiddishkeit, is exceedingly close to you, in your mouth, and in your heart, that you may perform it. Because at first glance, the question we all ask is, that doesn't seem to be the reality. Especially when you emphasize b'levavcha, that it is close to you not only in your mouth and in your perform, that you may perform it, but also b'levavcha in your heart, which means that it is easy, it is accessible, exceedingly accessible to every human being to develop and come to experience a real emotional, powerful relationship to Torah, to mitzvahs, to Hashem. That is something which is quite difficult. Sometimes we view it even impossible. And nevertheless, Moshe Rabbeinu tells every Jew that Karev Elecha, it is close to you, b'levavcha. So the explanation the Alter Rebbe said is that the love, the emotion, which Moshe Rabbeinu is describing in this verse, is clarified through the following word, La'asaisai, which means that the word La'asaisai actually classifies the meaning of B'levavcha. What is the meaning of B'levavcha? An emotion which leads to action, which leads to a certain type of behavior. When we say that it's Karev Elecha Adavar Mayayid to develop an emotional experience towards godliness, towards Yiddishkeit, towards spirituality, it doesn't necessarily mean creating a live, burning, and consuming passion. Rather, we are dealing with an experience which leads to action, to activity. This is a type of a levavcha which not necessarily brings a human being to a deep emotional sensation in a revealed, palpable, and conscious way. It may not have all the power and intensity of a heartfelt experience, but it is an experience which certainly changes man's behavioral life, man's actions, man's lifestyle in his thought, in his words, and in his deeds on a day-to-day life. This, says the Alter Rebbe, is Karev Ma'oid V'Nekel L'Chal Adam, as he described it on the top of Daf Chav Gimel. This is something which is very near and easy for every man. Asher Yesh Le'Mayach B'Kadkad, if he has a mind, if he has a brain in his head, that is the only condition. If he has a mind. Why? Because the mind is in every single person's domain. Man is not always a master on his emotional identity. Man is not always a master on his heart. A person cannot necessarily command himself to love or despise something or a certain human being, to desire or to abhor. But the mind of a person is always in his reshus, is exclusively in his domain, in the sense that via the energy of will, the willpower that exists in the mind, a person can decide to think about certain things and not to think about other things. One second. That's a good question. We'll come to it in a moment. You even see that many people have a job and they have to go to work every day. And at work, they're forced to think about certain things and they're not interested in thinking. They're not interested in putting their mind to it, but they do it. Because on the mind, you're ultimately the master. So they actually get into a mode and involved in things which are not necessarily appealing to their heart. But they force themselves, they coerce themselves to think about these issues. Since every person can utilize his mind and do whatever he wishes with his mind according to his desire, so if a person will use his mind to contemplate, to meditate, to think about spirituality, about the essence of life, about what constitutes his own true good, what constitutes the truth of life, if he meditates, if he puts his mind to meditate upon Hashem, upon Ein Sof Baruch Hu, naturally, the Alter Rebbe says, as a result of that, he will come to certain conclusions. Intellectual conclusions. And these conclusions, if he really thinks about it, will not be abstract conclusions, theoretical decisions, but rather intellectual convictions that obligate him as an individual human being. He will not necessarily come to experience emotionally what he understood to be a positive, beautiful, and just thing. But he will certainly come to a certain intellectual decision and conviction which obligates him as a human being and which leads to practical, pragmatic, and concrete conclusions in man's functional and behavioral life. And like every person, when he or she comprehends or understands that something is good for him and it's proper and just and appropriate to do, man goes ahead and does it so he can live his life in accordance with that. That is the Belevavcha experience which leads to La'asaisa. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu says is Karev Elech. A Belevavcha which is about man basking in godliness, man's heart being overwhelmed solely and exclusively by spirituality, that is very difficult. Indeed, certain human beings can't even experience that. But a belevavcha which leads to la'aseisa, which means that level of subjective experience, which is not about intense emotion, but is about a personal obligation, an intellectual conviction which is subjective and personalized, in the sense that it's not philosophically abstract, but it's rather relevant to my life, that I know that this is the right thing. This leads to la'aseisa. It makes a change in your life. It affects how you behave, how you think, how you speak, and how you behave in a very concrete level. And this is karev to every person, because no one can say that their mind does not belong to them. Your heart sometimes doesn't belong to you. Maybe more often than not, it doesn't belong to you. But a mind always belongs to you. That part that no one can rob away from you. And Alter Rebbe emphasized, v'zeh kol ha'adam. Don't underestimate this accomplishment of the human being. Because this is ultimately what the human being is all about. This is what is ultimately required and demanded from a human being as a human being on this journey, on his journey in this world. The question is, but the left shreitach, the heart is shouting, I'm not interested in this. The heart is fraught with impulses and cravings and desires and passions that are constantly overwhelming the human being and are constantly threatened to disrupt this type of moral and ethical behavior. So the Alter Rebbe continues, V'hamayach, and the mind, shalit b'tivoy v'tildasay, al chalol hasmali shebalev. The mind, by virtue of its inherent nature, is a master over the left part of the heart, which is, as explained in chapter 9 and the following chapters, that is the primary seat and abode of the animal egotistical soul, from where one's negative and unhealthy desires and cravings stem from primarily. So the mind is a master over that, over the heart, val piv, and the mind is a master over the mouth, val kol hevarim, and over all the bodily organs, shame klei hamaisa, which are the instruments of action. So therefore, via the mind awareness and conviction, man can come to achieve the beficha and the la'asaisa, because a mouth doesn't talk automatically. It's controlled by the mind, what it should say and what it should not say, when it should open itself and let itself be heard, and when it should close itself and not let itself to be heard. The same is true with all the bodily organs, whether it's the arms or the legs or any other of the organs, the eyes and so forth, which are the instruments of action through which one behaves, through which one implements convictions, desires, passions, and so forth, the la'asaisai instruments, the mind is a master over them. And the mind is a master over the heart, which means that notwithstanding a certain craving or impulse a man may have, the mind has the ability to master it and not to fall prey to all of these types of passions and desires. And as the Alter Rebbe emphasizes, Hamayach shalit b'tivoy v'teildasay, it's part of the psychological, it's inherent to the psychological anatomy of man. As he mentioned also the first time he brought up this axiomatic thought, which is axiomatic to the whole system of Tanya in chapter 12, that the mind ultimately cannot, by necessity, by all human beings, master the heart, in the sense that the heart shouldn't desire things that are unworthy to crave for according to the mind's conviction. But the mind can master the heart in the sense not to allow it to develop these cravings in the very structural, in the very structure of man's psychological and mental system. Hashem created him in a manner that a person has the ability, the full power and liberty, not to develop, to indulge, to implement cravings and impulses which are in opposition to his intellectual convictions. The same is true concerning the mouth and all of the instruments. Obviously, when you say that the mind is the master over the heart, there are certain conditions to it. We discussed this more elaboratively in chapter 12, because we see very often that the mind doesn't master over the heart. The mind doesn't master the heart. And we spoke then that there are several conditions, obviously. A, the mind has to disagree with the heart. If the mind agrees with what the heart is doing, so the mind and the heart are in sync. If you don't understand that what you want to do is wrong, no. B, the mind has to disagree with it, not only theoretically and philosophically, it has to produce a conviction. Such a theoretically improper thing. It's very personal. The mind says, no, you should not be doing this. And then that's not enough. The mind has to go into the battlefield. Has to be ready to fight. You could say, it's not the right thing, but I want to do it. It's not the right thing for me, but I still want to do it. The mind has to fight. The Rebbe says, the mind fights and the left fights. I promise you, the mind is always going to win. And it's not a miracle. Because if it's a miracle, it's not Karev Elecha. B'tivay v'tildasay. The very mental, psychological anatomy and structure of man is of a nature that when the Moyach and the Lev enter into the battlefield and they wrestle with each other, everyone giving all they got, but all they got, including the Moyach, the Lev gives it all it's got because that's its power. When the Moyach gives it all it's got again, the Lev, the Moyach will win. And that's the meaning in Moshe Rabbeinu's words, Karev Elecha Adavar Meyot, Beficha Vavavcha La'asaisi. Karev, it's accessible. It's relevant, it's close. It's accessible to every human being to live a life in a manner through which he remains loyal to his true identity. To live such a life. Because albeit that there are various forces that are activated within him and function in him, and they do threaten to disrupt that, to disturb that life, nevertheless a person has a very powerful instrument and weapon, and that is the Mayach. Through the Mayach a person can take and gain full control over his life, to live it in thought, speech and action in consistence with his intellectual awareness and intellectual convictions. Even though who's antithetical?
The world, everything that the world resonates with, everything that is given forth, it's hitting me the wrong way. The mind, the heart, the moral parts of others. It's an entire. I'm saying to myself, just as much as an entire.
The challenges of it, there's no. You're saying even though there are so many forces in opposition to that, that's obvious.
You have to study someone to say that. What does it mean to use the mind? It means an entire maximization, utilization of the mind. I mean, when you say the mind, what does it mean? The way we learn
the Gemara. The Alter Rebbe believes, apparently, it's obvious that the mind, that through man's mind, he or she is capable of a certain amount of real objectivity.
Active intellect, passive intellect. This is the combination of both. The shteisen, like, have to look into this, and also. What is the nature of
this intellect? Rebbe feels that the seichel ultimately can become the instrument through which one remains loyal to his true identity.
How do you use this intellect? I mean,
honest reflection. How do you use it? Through honest reflection. A person can make mistakes, of course. The Alter Rebbe says, "Kashe yizbeinim by begdula sein seif baruch hu. Yachal yizbeinim by kechala sheyachpitz." You can use your mayach for a lot of things, but kashe yizbeinim by begdula sein seif baruch hu, memele yoyled b'mayach al kol panim avol Hashem. That will produce an awareness. It will produce a relationship, a conviction. This is something that every person can try. You can try it out. You'll see, it works. It's hard, it's not easy. We spoke then, but this is an exercise which works. At the moment of the challenge, it's very difficult. Because I told you then, the Lev knows about this fact that Mayach Shalach Lalev. It has some wisdom of its own. And therefore the Lev knows that through that it can easily be defeated. So the Lev doesn't allow you to really reflect. And even if it allows you to reflect, it says that ultimately this is what you are all about. This is the better thing. Yeah. And a person has to have real vision and real depth not to fall prey to that. But when you don't fall prey to that, as the Alter Rebbe described very dramatically in chapter 12, it becomes like light and darkness, where there might be a lot of winds that are challenging the kindling of the flame, but the moment the flame is kindled, the darkness dissipates naturally. But the Alter Rebbe continues, Im loy mishehu rasha be'emes. This is true about every human being, except he who is true rasha, who is truly wicked. The Alter Rebbe is saying that everything that has been said above is relevant to the average human being and to every human being, save an exceptional type of human being who can be defined as a Rasha Be'emes. I will explain the term in a moment. Ukamay Mirazal, as our sages state, Sha'arishayim heim b'reshus libam, that the Rishayim, the wicked, are under the control of their heart, ve'ein libam b'reshusim klam, but their heart is not under their control at all. They're unable, in other words, to master the desires of their heart, and their minds have no active control over it. Pardon? One second. That will be understood in a moment. What's the point of such a person's existence? It's a good question. One moment. Where is this Maimir Azal? Really, in the beginning of the Perek, the Alter Rebbe quoted the first half of the Maimir Azal, that Tzaddikim Libam Berushusam. That tzaddikim have control over their heart. And the Alter Rebbe says, you see from this, that only tzaddikim libam b'rishusim, but everyone that's not a tzaddik is not libam b'rishusim. So how could you say? Kar v'lecha davim mayt b'lvavcha. The Alter Rebbe explained that b'lvavcha does not necessarily mean that level of libam b'rishusim, which we mean when we say that tzaddikim libam b'rishusim. Now this medrash is in Bereshis Rabba. In Medrash Rabba in Parshas Noyach, Parshas Lamedalit, the medrash quotes the pasuk v'yomer Hashem el liboy. Hashem spoke to his heart, so to speak, and the Medrash says, "Harishayim heim b'rishus libam. The Rishayim are under the control of their heart. They're in the domain of their heart, so to speak." As it says in Tehillim, "Amar Novel b'liboy." In Parshas Toldos, "Vayomer Esav b'liboy." In Melachim Aleph, "Vayomer Yeravam b'liboy." In Megillas Esther, "Vayomer Haman b'liboy." Aval hatzadikim libon birishusam. Tzadikim, they have control over their heart. Their heart is in their domain. They are not in the domain of the heart. V'chana hi medaberes al liba in Shmuel Aleph. Vayomer David el liboy, again in Shmuel Aleph. Vayasem Daniel al liboy. Vayomer Hashem el liboy. Later in Medrash Parshas told us on the pasuk concerning Esav. The Medrash emphasizes tzaddikim daimin labayron. That's, by the way, the source of this Maimon Chazal, that tzaddikim are similar to their Creator in the sense that just as vayomer Hashem el libay, the tzaddikim live in the same fashion. Tzemach Tzedek, the grandson of the Alter Rebbe, in one of his discourses, explains the difference between the psukim. Did you get the difference? Do you see the difference? Vayomer Esav b'liboy. Where is Esav saying it? Where is the initiation of Esav's convictions, of Esav's motivations, inspirations? B'liboy. By tzaddikim, what do we say? V'chanehi medaberes el liba. Her convictions, her impulses, her motivations are initiated in the mind, in vision, in the vision element of man. And that is then communicated to the heart. Because tzaddikim is libam b'rishusam. And rishayim heim b'rishus libam. The Pirush Maharzav on Medrash, it's one of the most popular and basic Pirushim on the Medrash, was written by Reb Ze'ev Wolf Einhorn. Pirush Maharzav. He lived in Vilna, the capital of Lithuania, in the 19th century. He wrote various Pirushim on the Medrash, one of them on various Midrashim. On a Medrash Rabbi, as Pirush Maharzav. So he puts it, he says, HaRishayim HaIkir Etzlam Hu HaTayve VaHachemda VaHatainug HaGufni Lasis MaShalibay Chafetz. By Rishayim, the primary thing is the corporal and physical craving and impulse and delight to do what the heart desires. And they are under the control of the negative cravings of their heart. Tzaddikim's life gravitate to Hashem's will. And and they impact their hearts, that it should be consistent with their mind, their intellect, and their vision. By these people who are Rishayim, the Alter Rebbe says, this axiom that Mayach Shalat Lev does not apply. They are Berushus Libam. Their Mayach is not in control of their heart. Their heart is in control of them. And the Alter Rebbe emphasizes Rasha Be'emes, a true Rasha. What does it mean, a Rasha Be'emes? Because we know, in according to the Tanya's definition, even a Jew who transgresses the divine will at seldom moments in his life, even a Jew who did one Aveira, in the strict, ultimate definition of things, can be defined a Rasha. But that's not a Rasha Be'emes. Can you say this person is wicked? You see, according to the definition of Rasha and Tanya, the word wicked is an inaccurate translation. Although all the English translations of Tanya use it because Rasha is wicked, but according to the Shem HaAmiti of Rasha, it's not a wicked. You know, the real translation for Rasha of Tanya is a weak person. Not a wicked person. It's weak. It's difficult. It's a tough battle. And he succumbs. He conforms. He compromises his true identity towards an impulse which will grant him instantaneous gratification. That's not a Rasha Be'emes. It's not really wicked. He's weak. It's not a Rasha Be'emes. But Rebbe said, I'm talking here about a Rasha Be'emes. The Rebbe once explained the term Rasha Be'emes on a deeper level. As we remember at the conclusion of chapter 13, the Alter Rebbe speculated and asked the question if a Beinoni's love to Hashem can be defined as Emes, because Emes by definition means eternity. Something that's true is eternal, something that's eternal is true. And the Beinoni's love of godliness dissipates and can sometimes be substituted and replaced by a totally other type of love. So by the tzaddik, he says, the av of a beinoni is sheker. So that's emes in the positive sense. The same emes is also true in the negative sense. A rasha be'emes means that the rishus has an emesdik quality to it. And just as in the positive sense, there are two levels in emes, the tzaddik's emes and the beinoni's emes. The tzaddik's emes is an emes in actuality, and the beinoni's emes is an emes in potentiality. Because the tzaddik is always perpetually experiencing a love towards Hashem. The Beinoni is not experiencing that love on a continuous level, but always has the potential to reconnect with that dimension. As he says, the Beinoni every day by davening can do it, and the fact that he can do it every day by davening means that it's part of his system. It's not just a random, spontaneous inspiration. So the same is true in Rasha Be'emes. There are the two levels. There's the Rasha Be'emes who's in contrast to the Tzaddik, with the Rishus is Be'emes. And this is the lowest level of Rasha described in chapter 11, a Rasha Virali. A Rasha Virali is that person who sins and sins and sins non-stop because he suppressed and buried his divine voice so deeply that he does not feel it anymore, and therefore he doesn't even experience any type of regret or remorse. So he's a Rasha Virali, where Ra pervades his entire consciousness, and the Toiv in him has been relegated to the subconscious cellars of his identity. So this person is a Rasha Be'emes. It's an Emes Eifen, as much as you could use the term Emes concerning negative phenomena. But then there is also the Rasha Be'emes in the potential level of Emes, where is that Jew who's always capable of sin. It's possible that circumstantially he doesn't always sin, but he's always capable of it. Which means that even if he experiences the divine soul and he can regret it, he never regrets it in a fashion that at that moment he's incapable of doing it all over again. He's always capable. At every moment it can reoccur if the right circumstances happen, which means there's no real strength of character. Nothing really changed in him. Even when he regrets it, because he feels his nefesh alikis, he doesn't experience it in such a deep way, and it doesn't have that impact to actually make a change, a real change, an emesdik change. The emes is still dominated by the ra. The eternity of his character and what he gravitates to is still dominated by ra. So that Rasha be'emes, the Alter Rebbe says, is heim b'rishus libam ve'ein libam b'rishus m'klah. They are under the control of their heart, and their heart is totally not controlled by them. Which means that they have cravings, they have impulses, and they become enslaved to them. And by no means can they get themselves out of it. Through rational thought, through rational convictions, through rational awareness, they do not only not possess the ability to control their emotions, which the Beinoni might also not possess that ability, but even their behavior they cannot control. In other words, they can be very well aware of what they're doing. It's not that they're senile. They can be very well aware in their mind what they're doing. They can have full conscious, full awareness that they are actually lowering themselves into a bottomless pit. But nevertheless, they cannot remove themselves from this situation. They cannot put a stop to it because the mind does not control the heart anymore. So they find themselves in a certain path, traveling, continually traveling in this dark path, and they cannot even oppose it and stop the process of descent after descent after descent. You'll ask the question, Mayach Shalit al Alev B'tivei V'Tildasei. Mayach Shalit al Alev is not something that you come through Havoida. The ability of Mayach Shalit al Alev, the Alter Rebbe says, is inherent in man's nature. So what happens to this individual that he is incapable of controlling his various cravings and impulses? So the Alter Rebbe continues, V'zeh Einish Al Gaidel Va'itzim Avayna. This is indeed a punishment, a consequence, which results from the enormity and potency of their sinfulness. Here we again immediately see that you're not just dealing with a Rasha in the ultimate definition of a Jew does one Avera. Gaidel Va'itzim Avayna. You're dealing with a human being whose life is filled with negativity, with unhealthiness. There is an enormity. His sins are enormous and very powerful. Gaidel Va'itzim. And this is part of the punishment for previous negative behavior in such a powerful way. Which means the Alter Rebbe is saying that indeed this is not part of the human structure. This is a result of his deeds. Man experiences this fate and this type of life as a result, as a consequence, as something that comes as a bechein, as a titzah of his behavior. And like all punishments in Torah, when you say einish, in Kabbalah and in Chassidus, this is discussed at length. There are two ways how to understand the punishments of Torah. One is called zguli and one is called tivi, which means either the punishment is a supernatural phenomenon, or it's tivi, it's a natural consequence. And Chassidus says that both elements are true. That every punishment in Torah is not just a punishment that Hashem imposes upon the person, disconnected from his act, essentially, but rather it is a natural result of what he has done. Just as when a person takes his finger and places it in fire, no one is going to say that the fact that your finger was burned is a punishment. It's not a punishment. When you place your finger in fire, it gets burnt. If you jump off a building from the eighth story of a building and you break both of your feet, God forbid, it's not a punishment. It's the natural result of your actions. If a person goes out into the street when the weather is 35 degrees below zero, not wearing the proper garments, he will get a major cold. So you're dealing with a punishment? No, Hashem created certain laws of cause and effect in the physiological anatomy of man's structure. Certain causes produce certain effects. These very same laws of cause and effect also exist in man's psychological structure. And in man's mental structure, just we're insensitive to it. We are sometimes so indulged in our corporal self, so we don't understand that when a person says a lie, for example, they just took their soul and placed it in fire. It's like taking a finger and putting it in fire. Gival, have rachmanis on your finger. That's what we do to our soul. And that has effects. It's not a punishment. that has mental effects, it has psychological effects, and it has also physical effects, because the physical and psychological world are intertwined and interconnected. When a person becomes so indulged in unhealthy behavior, in just fulfilling every external craving and impulse of the heart, it becomes so much a part of him that he loses the ability to master it, to control it. In his wonderful explanation to Tanya, Rabbi Adin Avin Yisrael, Adin Steinsaltz, in his Bir Tanya, gives an example to this phenomenon from people who reached a certain level of enslavement to drugs. We see this, unfortunately, it's a very common phenomenon in today's day and age. If in the beginning of the process you are still a master over the process, you have the power to make the decision if you're going to smoke up or not smoke up. In the beginning of the process, you are depressed, you want to experience deeper highs, and you actually make the decision whether you're going to take it or not take it. Once you make that decision, then you're still in control. And you continue taking it more and more and more. Ultimately, you reach that point where you don't have the ability to stop it anymore. Huh? You become totally addicted to it. It's not necessarily that your brain was totally fried. That might happen, God forbid, at the end of the process. Sometimes the intellectual process is functioning, but nevertheless, it lacks absolutely the power, the capacity, the potential to take a stand, a real stand, in contrast to the cravings, inner and outer cravings, which are leading and pushing the person into a certain direction. Then the human being does not find himself anymore in his own domain. He is not in control anymore. Rather, he finds himself controlled by his cravings and desires and addictions. And the same is true concerning every issue. When a person allows the beast to develop, to grow, in the beginning he is developing it. But then ultimately it becomes so big that he's not developing it anymore. Now it develops him. Now it consumes him. It's already using him. The beast is already using him. He's not using it anymore. One good question, is there no hope for such a person? You think the Alter Rebbe would leave it by the, you think the Alter Rebbe would stop it here? Yeah. Hashem, what happens is, as a result of this process, Hashem takes away this ability. Or, you might put it other ways, it's inherent to the process. As a result of this type of behavior, that is the natural consequence. One second. You know, the Baal Shem Tov says that everything that a Jew sees or hears contains within itself a lesson for his or her personal life. There's even the story of, it's actually a classic story in this field, where the Baal Shem Tov was once sitting in his shul in Mezhebuzh. That's the city where the Baal Shem Tov lived. And he was teaching his students, extraordinary holy men. In the middle of the shiur, in the middle of the class, a Gentile, non-Jewish Russian peasant came knocking on the window. And the student opened the window. He told the student that was sitting right near the window, "Hey, I have a horse and wagon that fell into a muddy pit. And I cannot schlep it out by myself. Can you please come out and help me?" Now, if you were sitting there, what would you tell the guy? You're sitting in the presence of the Baal Shem Tov, who is revealing the deepest depths of Torah, of spirituality, of godliness. You're going to go help a guy to schlep a horse and wagon from a pit? So what would you tell him? What do we always say when? I can't. So he says in Russian, he says, Majidzda nyechachitz. You can, you just don't want to. The Baal Shem Tov overheard that. He stopped and he says, everything a Jew hears is a lesson for his own life. Don't say you can't. That's not true. You could. You can get out of that seat and go schlep out his horse and wagon from the pit. What, you can't? You don't want to. We're not discussing the reasons, but you don't want to. He says, in every process of a man's life, there's a situation when there's a fork. You can go this way or this way. You can make this decision or this decision. You can behave this manner or that manner. And you know that one way is the right way, but I can't. You can. If you produce, you have the awareness. You can, if you want. But in any case, so everything is a lesson. Therefore, I take the liberty to illustrate this with the following example. You know, sometimes you can observe an event and it can become an instrument for gossip. It makes good conversation and gossip. Comes the Baal Shem Tov and says, when you hear about an event, the reason you heard about it was not coincidental, but it has to be utilized for a purpose of healing, of refinement, of the human condition, of the human process. So here you have a human being who, from an earthly point of view, is the most powerful human being on earth, is the leader of the exclusive superpower of our world. Then there is a certain type of behavior following certain impulses and cravings that can destroy this human being, his life, his character, and all of his influence. We spoke once that every taiva has a price. Every craving, implementation of every impulse has a price. For example, if you want to today or tomorrow, if you are overtaken with a certain type of impulse, which is unhealthy, but you want to do it, so you're ready to go ahead and do it, and then you know, for whatever reason, theoretically speaking, that you're going to have to pay for this impulse $100. You can implement it, but it'll cost you $100. No mela! What if they'll tell you, do it, and you'll have gratification for 5 minutes, but it's going to cost you $10,000. I wouldn't do it. It doesn't pay for me. According to my financial situation, it doesn't pay for me to have 5 minutes of instantaneous gratification to close down my bank account, to pay $10,000. It doesn't pay. For some people, it is worth it. But $500,000, somewhere it stops. Somewhere it stops. It's not worth it.